Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches. I am Dorian Wallace, joined as always by my lovely sister, Raina. What are you talking about?
What?
She's already making fun of me. What the hell?
No, it's just every time I hear the unmute button, it cracks me up.
I know, and it's like, sometimes I forget, like last time, I forgot. I was like,
I know.
Are you there? Oh, fuck. I forgot to God damn it.
Okay, give your shout out so I can give our disclaimer. Good.
All right. I've got two shout outs tonight. I've got my weekly shout out to my cousin Jessica. I'm going to send you a knuckle sandwich and a bag of chips. Love you, Jess. And I want to send a huge congratulations to friend of the show, Mr. Christian Day, who just proposed to his boyfriend, Mr. Brian Kane. So congratulations, you two. Mazel tov. Long life and happiness to you both.
Okay, I'm going to give my disclaimer now.
Okay.
Anybody who's listening for the first time, this is not a G or PG rated show. There is lots of cursing, and I'm liable to talk about who knows. I will go from penis size to time your shoelaces in the moment's notice without any fucking warning. Oh, see, I just dropped an S-bomb. So get your delicately eared ones out of the room. Thank you very much. So we are Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Talk about body parts. It's my favorite stuff.
This you will find interesting because there's been a couple scenes going on this week with serendipity. Yesterday, I mean, like, two of my friends I saw, like, within minutes apart in my newsfeed quit their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, probably just coincidence. Today,
mm-hmm.
I believe it was today, there was, there is now this thing, I think it was Leanne Marma posted it, and it was vaginal spa treatments. Like, you can get your vaginal area, like a facial for your vajayjay. I was like, are you fucking kidding me with this shit?
A facial? Honey, can you pick mine up off the ground and put it back into place? Oh, my God.
No, so,
I'm old.
So you can make
I need more than a facial. I need a whole lift. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, so you can make your chooch, you know, smell like, what do you call it? Like rosemary and lavender and all kinds of shit. I'm like, you know, rich people would buy any fucking thing. I swear to God.
Well, you know, of course, your sister is now fucking dying of curiosity, and I'm gonna have to do a consultation trip and find out what fragrance suits me best. Although I don't. Eau de Cunt does not sound like my number one choice of fragrance, but hey, look, whatever it is what it is, you know.
I'm just like, what do they do? Stick a fucking air freshener up there? What the hell?
Well, no, but you've got to consider if it's going to smell good, it better taste good too, right? I mean, is it than just, you know, a scent, or is it a fragrance, or a what? I mean,
I guess get
the 411 on this shit. I'm very curious.
Okay, I'm going to find the link for you and send it to you. And
fabulous.
There's
something else. Oh, there's more. Go
yes.
ahead,
oh, and then you have the other end of the spectrum. Crazy fucking artist. Now, don't get me wrong. I
saw that.
Oh, did you the knitting?
No, no, no. I thought you were talking about the asshole gallery. It's literally a gallery of portraits, close-up shots of the sphincter of many people.
Oh, my God.
It's
no,
hilarious.
No. This, now,
but I saw
and
the, you, are you talking about the woman who knits out of her vagina?
Yes. Have you seen that?
I don't get it. I saw the post, but I didn't read the article because I thought some people have entirely too much time on their hands or apparently yarn in their vaginas. How does that even happen? I don't get it.
I don't think I want to know. I mean, but she literally sticks a skein of yarn up her vajayjay.
Uh-huh.
Or whatever you call it, your chokes, your vag, whatever. Sticks it up there, and then, you know, it's you know, pulls from the middle, and she sits there and knits, you know, and there's a video to go with it to kind of show what she's doing. And I'm like, who the hell's going to wear that fucking scarf? But you know what? Every time I think something like that, somebody would wear it. I can guarantee you some fashion model or some designer, some weird rich person will buy that because weird attracts money. I don't know why they go hand in hand. I really don't. I don't get it. I support the arts, but that is just fucking ridiculous.
Wow. I mean, really? Should I start, you know, sending copies of my pap smear out as art? I mean, is this art too? What else is art? I guess art is a personal self-expression. I've heard that. I often try to believe that, although some things weird me out. You know, some man's meat is another man's poison. I have no idea. But I can't imagine, first of all, the idea of putting yarn inside me is a very foreign idea. I don't get that. And then to want to create knitted works is just very strange. I mean, our brother knits. He's really into it. So, like, should I say, hey, bro, do you want me to, like, what? It's just weird. I don't get it. I don't understand I don't know why she does it. I guess we need to know why she does it. Do any of our listeners know why this woman is sticking yarn in her cunt, for God's sake, and making something out of it? I have no clue. This will need further investigation, and will probably be a good follow-up topic on next week's show when Jade Sol Luna comes back on.
There you go. Maybe he can enlighten us.
I do not know.
On the art of vaginal knitting.
Not for nothing, but he has such a huge knowledge of cultures that I know nothing about. He very well might understand. There might be something there that I just don't want to understand at all. I don't get it. I think it's weird.
Yeah.
But okay.
I'm all for self-expression, but, you know, sometimes maybe you should keep that in your own house. You know, some things just that the public is not ready for. We don't need to see that. That's like, you know, and it's white when it goes in. What color is it? It looked white when it came out. How did she keep it that
clean? Poor taste.
Yes, I have finally grossed my sister out.
That's just fucked up. I don't get it. I think it's too weird for words. But anyway, so let's get to something more important. How was your week?
My week was actually not too bad. The child went back to school after being sick last week.
Mm-hmm.
I finally went to the doctor to, because I don't know if you all remember my little accident that I had, my sleepwalking episode with the dog that I thought I broke my finger, and it's really not gone back since. But they took an X-ray. Finger's okay. It's just the tendons. So she's got me on not Percocet. It's a steroid. It's
prednisone.
Prednisone. Thank you. And some Flexeril. So it's, I'm actually able to grasp stuff with this finger again. How was your week?
Yeah. My week was fine, and then today it got really interesting, and it occurs to me that there are a lot of changes that are about to occur in my life. Some people will be allowed to stay in my life, and some people are going away. unfortunately, they don't know about it yet, but they will. Mm-hmm. But those are decisions that are going to take some time to fully ruminate, as it were. I have a lot of things I have to think about. My life is about to get extremely complicated, and there are people who will play ball, and there are people who will not. And, you know, sometimes you have to cut your losses and say goodbye. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of that going on in the very near future for me. So it's going to be interesting.
I'm sorry. No, I was going to reiterate. Yeah, there's been a lot of losses. Both, you know, I mean, obviously Nelson Mandela, who great respect for that. But you know, joyful for his transitioning, because you know, he, when they were filming him when he was sick the last time, you know, he looked like he was ready to go, and I'm fully supportive of, you know, when it's somebody's time to go, it's somebody's time to go. But Chris Hardwick just lost his dad a couple weeks ago, and, you know, Paul Walker, you know, a bunch of people have been going. So it's amping up with this shift, with things changing, people coming and going, people changing their way of life, you know, so this is good.
It's hard.
Even though
it's stressful.
Yeah.
It's very stressful. It's going to be difficult in some regards for me, but it's going to be great in other ones. So it's just weird. It's weird to have, you know, certain types of power at certain times. You know, you can change someone's life by, you know, starting relationships, ending relationships, being in the trenches with some people when things are tough, and then, you know, it's weird when you step into a certain kind of power and it's like, okay, things have to radically change, you know, and you can't really say it in a group like, well, some of you are going to live and some of you are going to die, and it's my choice. It's kind of my choice to make, and it's weird. It's just a weird thing. So it's going to be interesting over the next several weeks. My understanding is that there are some things that I'm going to have to decide fairly soon. There are some things that aren't going to be quite as much in a rush, but I've got to get prepped for this next phase of my development. So it's really interesting. It's really interesting. And astrologically, because I don't follow Western, I follow Asterian, obviously. A lot of this was stuff that was, you know, given to me in a reading not that long ago, and it's just weird to see things suddenly start coming about and happening the way they were sort of predicted. So it's an interesting time. It's going to be a difficult time, but it's going to be a good time too. So I'm pretty excited.
Yay.
It's scary, though. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard to let go of certain people and certain things sometimes, but it's necessary for growth, you know?
Yeah.
It's necessary. So, but anyway, enough of my my changing life. Want to do some reading?
To move this a little bit back. You do what you do.
I'm going to do waka-do, like I do.
Do waka-do. From waka-waka.
All I can tell you is I'm so glad the work week is over. I'm sure y'all agree. It's been. And this weather, what the fuck? It's winter. It's summer. It's winter. What?
Right?
How
I know.
Did that happen?
It was
I'm hot.
What?
It's hot in here. It was 78 degrees when I pulled into the parking lot at the house tonight.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then tomorrow it's going to be like 39.
Just something, I don't know, something weird and crazy.
No. Yeah, it's supposed to be in the lower 50s or upper 40s, and then Sunday we may get snow. It's like, seriously, I was wearing a T-shirt on Friday, and it's going to snow on Sunday. What the fuck?
No, what I like is when it snows and it's really cold, and the next morning you're clearing off your car in a T-shirt. We did that
once at the old
house. That was crazy, but it was funny because we were all outside in T-shirts, and there was snow all over the place. It was melting, but it was still really funny. Have you pulled your cards yet?
Yes, I'm putting the rest of the deck back. And I have 5 cards, and I just dropped one. That's not good.
Oh, no, maybe that one wants to be read first.
Huh, and the way I pulled it up said Sunday.
There you
and
go.
And business prosperity.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know. I'll have to read the rest, because that was number 4.
Ooh,
I'm going
really?
To... Yeah.
Oh, no, the progression of my cards is very funny.
How is it?
Yeah, it's funny, and then it's not funny, and then it's funny.
Okay. You want to go first?
Yeah, I'll just read it, and you can tell me what you know, because I can't quite pick up who or what this is. So the first card says a surprise is in store. Already makes me laugh. Enjoyable vacation. Now, I know that's not me because I haven't been on a vacation in many years. Just saying. Unlucky, caution needed is the third card. I don't know if that's tied to the vacation. And then it says funeral to be attended, which could mean kind of anything.
I don't think that's a funeral, though.
I don't either. I think it's some kind of a going-away party, just that it's a permit going away. And then the last card is a favorable relocation. So I'm like, okay, what? What? So that's weird.
So,
I don't get it.
So this is somebody who is basically moving. But at that point, it's going to be terrifying because it's all going to kind of hit bam, 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 bam. Like, the person gets let go from their job and then freaking out, of course, as anybody would, and then immediately, like, almost the next day get another job and it be out of state or out of country.
See, and I've got something a little bit different from that.
Okay.
What I've got is that there's going to be a life-changing event, and what you think is just a trip away is actually going to turn into, somehow a decision is made to, again, change your entire life. And the funeral, the job ending is actually a going-away party.
Okay,
the favorable relocation. So I think it's actually a good thing, but I think it's going to come as a major shock to the person that this reading is for. And I don't know who it is. Not a clue.
I'm not.
Be on the lookout,
yeah.
Boo-boo. One of you is going to change your life very fucking quickly in the next 6 months. Be prepared. Just saying. What do you got, sis?
Okay, I've got a couple cards. I don't like the top row. I really don't. First one is Beware of the Law, and this is this is a female, and you've been dabbling with some snorty type of stuff. Knock it off.
Ooh.
So you're gonna get caught. I know you think you won't, because you're just an occasional user, but no, just stop. Stop it. wrong decisions bring problems. So if you don't listen to me, you're going to regret it. You got to have a bad time. third card is actually for somebody else. A letter brings bad news. This is something you've been waiting on, wanting to say, like a house or something major. I'm seeing a house, but it might be related to school, like a school that you're wanting to get into, and you're going to get a no. But it's okay. It's okay. I know you're going to be disappointed. Let yourself grieve for the loss of that, but this next place that you're moving on to, the letter that you will get the yes from, you'll be A-okay with that. It's actually the better move for you and puts you in the path of the people you need to be in the path of. So just take a deep breath. Everything's fine. It's not the end of the world. Okay. Fourth card, I have Business Prosperity, which is a good, I think this is all across the board. As far as, you know, because it's the Yuletide season, and a lot of people are wanting to, spend some moolah. And, you know, this is going to bring a boost for everybody. So be on the lookout for that. It's not going to be huge, but you will see an increase. So that's a plus. Fifth card, Opportunity for Passionate Romance. There are a lot of office parties going on. Just make sure you're not passionate with somebody you shouldn't be passionate with. Don't be going stealing nobody's man, you know, or kissing on the boss, or, you know, smooching in the bathroom. That's just gross. Don't do that. Anyway, so that is my reading.
That's crazy that you said that, though, because when I was a lot younger, and I mean like 20-some-odd years ago, we had an office party. It was a company I worked for in New York. And this old man in the middle of the party followed me into the coat room, grabbed me and kissed me. And he didn't, like, touch me, but he kissed me, and it was just so weird.
Ew.
It was,
no.
Yeah,
no, bad. Yucky.
Yeah, it wasn't cool. It was. I'm sorry. It just reminded me of that, and I'm like, oh, not a pleasant memory. Undo.
I'm sorry. Yeah, this is going to be a mutual thing. You know, it's like people get drunk. They're, you know, oh, you're cute, and oh, I'm, you know, you think I'm cute. Okay, let's go smoochy. Don't go smoochy. Yeah,
smoochy. No smoochy.
Oh, because I'm telling you right now, what's going to happen? You think you're not being watched. You think you're being cautious. You think you're being careful. Somebody's going to see you. And it ain't going to be good, because it's going to be the office gossip.
Yeah, so, no, not cool. A good thing. Not a good, no. Behave.
But that's okay. This person, actually, there's two of the people in the reading. You're stubborn, and you're not going to listen to me, and I know you're not going to listen to me. So go on with you. Have fun with that. I told you.
You've been warned.
Yeah.
Some people just don't ever listen. What are you going to do?
I know. Some people's kids.
Oh, jeez. So is our guest on the line?
No, not yet. Let me see. Let me scroll up. Yeah, he knows. He better be calling in. He's going to get a smackdown. He doesn't call in this time.
Okay, he still has a couple of minutes, actually, does he? No, actually, he's got five. He's got 5 minutes. Okay, good. That's good. Every clock, I don't know if you guys do this, every clock in my house says something different, every one of them. My cell phone says one thing. My tablet says another thing. The clock on the stove says something else. The cable box says something else, and the alarm clock has yet another reading. Nothing matches. Nothing. Nothing. It drives me batshit. I never know exactly what time it really is.
Cable box. Because the cable box runs through, whichever cable provider, so they have to have the accurate time.
Well,
so I would trust
myself,
that. I would trust.
Well, wait. Why doesn't my cell phone
have to
have
the phone.
Well, how come my cell phone and my cable box don't match them? Somebody's lying.
Fire them all.
don't think I haven't thought of that, but unfortunately, I do have to say this. So, speaking of all the changes in my life and the decisions I have to make and all these other things, I went into my boss's office. I made a very brave move today, since we're still on the subject of that stuff, and I said to her, you know, of all the vacation days I've taken in the past year, I've not actually been off of work one day. So I said, I'm just letting you know in advance that next year, this coming year, the year that's going to start in about 4 weeks, I am going to start taking time off and not working. So I've already decided on who I'm going to train as my backup. And it's
Yay!
Your buddy, so... Yes, your buddy is your buddy. Buddy doesn't exactly know what's going on per se, with all of the changes that are about to occur, because he's kind of in the dark on that and needs to be. But I did make a comment to him today that he was going to have. I want to train him to be me. I said, I want you to become me, okay? And he said yes. And I said, ooh, lovely. So yes. We have goals in mind, so I'm very excited.
Yay! Okay. Oh, I'm so excited for both of you. Because, it would be nice to take a vacation. Because I know you work.
I know.
If you take phone calls, and it's like, you can't even go to the fucking mall. Well, we don't go to the mall, but you can't even go to the fucking store without them up your ass.
Well, here's the funny thing. It seems like a lot of the calls I get are while I'm in the bathroom. I don't know why or how they know that my pants are down at that particular moment, but it's become like a cosmic joke between the two of us. He's like, I hear the way your voice sounds. It's reverberating funny. You're in the bathroom again, aren't you? I'm like, yeah. It's like, you know how your kids knock on the door, Mom, are you done? Mom, you coming out? Mom.
Yeah.
Mom, at the bathroom door, same thing. You almost done? I have to talk to you about something. Are you almost done? It's like, oh, jeez, please, really? Leave me alone.
My kids don't talk to me unless I'm in the bathroom or on the phone. Then
what
it's like
radar. It's like radar. Like they know.
Yeah. It's like, oh, Mom, I have to bugger. But you know what? I was guilty of it when I was a kid. And it's like, I didn't mean to. It wasn't on purpose. It was just, it was some kind of, like, I guess, magnet in the phone that went off that reminded me of the question that I needed to ask my mother.
You know what? Any excuse. I don't remember bothering my mother in the bathroom all that much. I would have to ask her if that's, in fact, true. I don't remember asking her a lot of questions in the bathroom. I don't know what it is about the bathroom. Some of the greatest things in my life, some of the greatest thoughts I've ever had have occurred while on the commode.
That's awesome. See, I get my best ones in the shower. I really do.
Yeah, and the shower is such a much more romantic place to have these things occur. Yeah, I've actually been proposed to twice while on the commode.
The toilet is
I don't get it.
Throne.
It is my magic throne, but you know what? I'd rather be standing up when when asked, but okay. Whatever.
There you go.
It's just a weird thing about me in the bathroom.
Well, on that note.
Oh, okay. Potty time is over, is it? All right,
yes,
then.
Yes, potty time is over. The potty's over.
The potty's over. It's time to flush it away. All right, go ahead.
Hey, Salazar.
Hey there. You know, it's my potty, and I'll cry if I want to. So.
No, it's your potty and your wife if you want to. There you go. We have missed you so much.
So you're leading into my segment talking about toilets.
Yes.
Sorry.
Well, you know, and it's kind of funny, too, because one of the big conspiracies that people on the right wing like to talk about, the liberals are coming for all your freedoms. One of the things that they complain about are, I kid you not, toilets. They claim that toilets are part of the liberal conspiracy to take away your freedoms because of the fact that fast flow toilets have been banned because they waste way too much water, and it's literally like, you know, killing a mosquito with a cannon. It's just, you know those old-fashioned toilets that everybody's grandparents used to have in their bathrooms that literally you'd have, like, the 25-gallon tank to flush to get rid of, like, a urination and stuff like that. Now the tanks are limited to something like 1.2 or maybe 2 gallons per flush. And, you know, it gets the job done, but the right-wing mind just cannot handle the fact that they don't get to have as big of a toilet as they used to. So
you're kidding me. This is ridiculous.
No. I am not. You have to realize that when I'm talking about right-wing idiocy, there is no such thing as kidding. It really isn't.
That's true.
I mean,
I'm sorry. I was just going to refer to the Ted Cruz thing. I think he had posted it.
Yes.
Because he offered his condolences about Nelson Mandela, they were going apeshit on his page. It's like,
yes.
I have never seen a more disgusting display of humanity as with those people. It's just
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's you know, let's face it, just your basic political pandering to a popular political figure just doesn't quite go over with the jihadists because they've been fed this constant diet of anybody, you know, anybody darker than someone with a tan is obviously some part of some vague Kenyan socialist conspiracy to, you know, take over your toilets and give you light bulbs that are funny shaped. And that's another thing, too, that the right-wingers are up in arms about is light bulbs. Yes, they are. They don't like energy-efficient light bulbs. In fact, one of the first things that John Boehner did after taking over the House of Representatives was countermand an order put down by Nancy Pelosi that the offices in the House of Representatives have energy-efficient light bulbs. His first act as Speaker was to go back to the old inefficient light bulbs. So that's just the incredibly warped world. And what's funny is that earlier this week, I put out a piece by Andy Borowitz on my Facebook. And Andy Borowitz, for those of you who don't know who Andy Borowitz is, he's probably one of the funniest, smartest commentators on the political scene today. He does political humor, and he now writes for the New Yorker magazine, for their website. And, I mean, this guy just writes incredible, incredible pieces of snark that whenever I post some, I always feel compelled, or one of my other minions on my wall feels compelled to remind people that this is satire because the stuff he writes is entirely believable. That's the weird thing. It was an article that Andy had written about Republicans are complaining now that healthcare.gov, the Obamacare website, is not working too quickly. And that it was at risk of putting important IT bug fixing people out of a job because it was working too efficiently. And, you know, it was a really, very snarky piece, but I did realize that, you know, you really do have to tell people that this isn't accurate, because you could imagine hearing those words coming out of the mouth of someone like Michelle Bachmann or Sarah Palin or something like that. So the entire party has jumped the shark to the point where literally, I mean, just shark jumping, if it were an Olympic event, they would hold the gold medal. It's pretty incredible.
Wow.
And talking about jumping the shark, today, elements of the far right in the Republican Party in the House started trying to ease people into the idea of another government shutdown.
Oh, you're kidding
me. Oh, my God.
No, because what's happening is that basically the Congress gave themselves until December 15th to come up with a budget, a new budget. And if they don't pass a new budget, then they need to pass a continuing resolution to keep the government open while they keep negotiating for the budget. Otherwise, the government's going to run out of money and shut down on January 15th. Now, people in the Republican leadership, those people who would like to pretend that they're running their party these days, and those people who really aren't really fond of self-inflicted wounds, people like John Boehner and all that stuff, have put together a plan to basically put together a continuing resolution that would ease the sequester spending limits, mainly on military spending, but they were going to throw Democrats a few bones, like extending unemployment benefits and that kind of stuff, just to keep things going until they could come back and have some sort of grand battle royale after the first of the year. Well, the people in the Tejadas caucus in the House of Representatives, and let me remind you that the Tea Party caucus in the House of Representatives is not that big. We're talking about 40, 50 people max. But they are saying that they do not want anything spent that's above the sequester levels. And they're willing to go to the mat to make sure that the sequester spending levels stay in place. The thing is that the next round of sequestered spending cuts are entirely going to take place within the defense sector. And that is something that Republicans have traditionally not been that crazy about. As a matter of fact, it was the Defense Department spending cuts that originally made people think that the Republicans didn't want the sequester to happen at all. But unfortunately, the way it was structured is that it hit all the other government programs first and wouldn't hit the Defense Department until January of the new year. And so the Republicans were quite happy to let spending get cut for everybody else. But now that it's coming time for the defense to get cut, there's a decent number of Republicans, especially those who come from states that get a lot of money from defense contracts, who are saying, okay, well, maybe we should kind of change this up a little bit. But the Tea Party caucus, they want none of it. They want to keep the sequester spending levels, and they want to cut even more. They're the ones who wanted to cut $40 billion out of food stamps and shift that money towards more corporate farm subsidies. That's their current brilliant idea. That's DOA in the Senate, but that's another hill that they're willing to fight and die on as far as causes go. So you've got a real possibility here, even though a majority of the people in the House do not want to see a government shutdown, that if John Boehner is going to go with a very, very stupid and archaic rule called the Hastert Rule. Now, the Hastert Rule is something that Denny Hastert came up with when he was the Speaker of the House for the Republicans after Newt Gingrich lost his job. And Denny Hastert said that he wasn't going to bring any legislation to the floor that didn't enjoy a majority of the majority, unless a majority of the Republicans were in favor of something, he wasn't going to bring it to the floor. And if Boehner is insisting on only bringing things to the floor that's going to completely clear the Republican caucus, then he's going to be stuck between a rock and a hard place, because the Tea Party caucus is just big enough to be able to cause problems when it comes to that. So we could very well see another government shutdown come January 15th.
Oh, gee. You know, I think people are getting very numb to all of this, because it seems like these things are just happening and then they get it fixed temporarily, and then it happens all over again. It's like a constant threat.
Government by crisis, governing from crisis to crisis, and all these crises are self-imposed. That's,
right.
You know, I mean, last year at this time, there was talk of the fiscal cliff. That
uh-huh.
was when people were talking about that last year, all through December. It was about the fiscal cliff. And that was
uh-huh.
another self-imposed crisis that didn't really need to happen.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
You know, yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to ask, there's like so many things that have happened the last time we spoke. So, okay, so the whole filibuster thing changed. What happened here with the filibuster, and now it's limited, and what? Give me all that rundown, please.
Okay, give you a brief history of the filibuster. There is absolutely nowhere in the Constitution that mentions anything about a filibuster or a filibuster type of rule. The filibuster is entirely a rule made up by the Senate fairly early on, and basically it said that once debate starts on a particular issue, that debate is open-ended. Now, in the House of Representatives, when they have debate on a bill, debate is limited to X amount of time. And when that time's up, debate automatically ends. That's not the way it is in the Senate. In the Senate, let's say you're bringing up a bill to raise the minimum wage. And there's going to be, okay, we're going to start debate on this bill. And basically people take turns, and they all have they all get a chance to get up and talk. And when they're done talking, they'll say, I yield the floor, and the person running the session, the president pro tem of the Senate, will go ahead and say, okay, the chair recognizes the honorable Mr. such and such from this little backwater in fucking Kentucky or something like that. And they'll talk for a while. Quite often these speeches take place to an empty chamber because the senators have way more important things to do. If you're a Republican, usually having gay sex in a bathhouse somewhere right before you go and vote on another bill against homosexuals. But I digress.
Hello.
The debate just keeps going on and on until there's something there's a motion to invoke cloture. Now, cloture basically shuts off debate on a bill so that you can then move forward on actually voting on possible amendments to the bill and that kind of stuff, yada, yada, yada. And when the old-fashioned idea of a filibuster, and this is the kind of stuff that you will find in movies like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, is when somebody comes up there and says, I am going to talk about this and I am not going to give up my speaking time. I'm just going to keep talking and talking and talking and hold up all action on this bill. And in old-fashioned types of filibusters, you'd get four or five people who'd decide we're going to filibuster this bill, and they would pass the debate buck back and forth to each other and only recognize each other and, yield only to each other so that somebody can go and, pee or go and eat or take a nap or something. And the old-fashioned filibusters would last 2 or 3 days where basically people would talk 24 hours a day, and that was usually just to call attention to a bill that they thought was bad and they didn't want passed. It was a pretty extreme measure, and it didn't happen that often.
Right.
The old-fashioned kind of what they call the talking filibuster was the kind of thing, like in the Texas legislature when Wendy Davis decided she wanted to bring attention to the fact that the Texas state legislature was trying to ram through an extreme anti-woman forced birth bill, anti-abortion, anti-choice bill. She did a talking filibuster until all of the news places noticed it, and they started talking about this bill before she did the talking filibuster would have been shoved through without hardly a moment's hesitation. So there were plenty of instances in the past where the filibuster was a very, very useful tool. But then it was either the 1970s or 1980s, I can't remember exactly when, the rules of the filibuster changed to where you didn't have to actually talk constantly to keep debate going on a particular subject. And then what they called the silent filibuster came into effect, where basically they would say, well, we're going to vote for cloture on this bill to end debate. And if the cloture vote failed, basically if Most of the time with most of these bills, they just say, we're going to end debate, and nobody complains. Nobody says, you're going to have to vote on this. The vast majority of bills in the old Congress, we're not talking about since Barack Obama took office, but talking in past years, people just say, okay, if there's no opposition, we're going to end debate. And nobody would oppose, and they'd end debate, and they'd just go forward and do an up or down vote on the bill. But basically, the silent filibuster says that you can oppose any debate. You can oppose cloture, and in order to force the debate to be over, you need a two-thirds majority or 60 votes in the Senate. Even though you only need 51 to pass a bill, you need 60 votes to force end debate on a bill. And when they started with the silent filibuster, that meant that you could say, well, I oppose ending debate on this bill, and if the other side couldn't get 60 votes to force the end of the debate, then the Senate would just move on to other business. And this bill is considered in permanent open debate and would just kind of sit there until the side that actually wanted to get the bill voted on could muster 60 votes. Now, even at that, when they started the silent filibuster, it wasn't really abused. It was just a way to extend debate on certain subjects in a way that didn't demand that people grandstand and talk constantly for hours and hours and hours. But the thing that's happened since Barack Obama came into office is that Republicans who had a stated objective to obstruct absolutely everything that this president tried to do, you can take a look at the graph. The filibuster went from an occasional weapon to something that has been used a ridiculous amount of time. Literally every single bill that comes up in the Senate, if it's not a Republican bill, gets filibustered. Somebody opposes cloture, and they make there be a 60-vote majority to pass anything. And it's literally been to the point where this Congress has passed less bills than any other Congress in the United States history. We've literally gone, during Harry Truman's time, when he ran against the Do-Nothing Congress, that Congress passed something like 390 bills in those 4 years. This Congress has mastered around 89. Pieces of legislation passed, and a lot of those were things like renaming post offices and shit like that. And the Republicans have abused the filibuster so much to the point where literally Republicans would vote against cloture on their own bills that they wrote if President Obama came out and said, I like that bill, let's get it passed and I'll sign it. All of a sudden they'd be voting against their own bills just to deny this president a win. And one of the places where it's been the most egregious, the use of the filibuster, is with judicial nominations. And that's the thing, is that when it comes to the federal judiciary, and we're not just talking about Supreme Court, we're talking about any federal judges, circuit courts, we're talking about any federal judgeship is nominated by the president, and then it's voted on by the Senate to confirm. And it's gotten to the point where there were 81 vacancies on the federal court that President Obama could not get filled because every single one of his nominees was getting filibustered. There had to be a 60-vote supermajority to even get an up or down yes or no vote on these people. And what had happened was that George W. Bush appointed judges, and they got confirmed. That just kind of happened. And at the end of Bush's tenure, there was kind of a conservative majority on these courts. And the Republicans have wanted to preserve the Bush conservative majority on these courts. They want to pretend like elections don't have consequences, and they wanted to deny this president the ability to appoint judges who are maybe a little bit closer to the mainstream of American thought. And so they've been purposefully filibustering every single judicial nomination that President Obama puts out in an attempt to keep the conservative majority on the courts. It's gotten so bad that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is it's probably the second most important judiciary in the entire country, the most important being the Supreme Court, because just about every case that goes to the Supreme Court gets argued in front of the Ninth Circuit Court first. And these judges habitually have a very, very heavy caseload, and the amount of judges that are supposed to be on the Ninth Circuit Court is 11. There's supposed to be 11 mm-hmm. justices on the Ninth Circuit Court. There have been 8 for the entire time that Barack Obama has been in office, because the 3 seats that he's tried to fill, the Republicans have blocked every single time. As a matter of fact, Republicans have even been getting to the point by saying that they want to pass legislation to permanently lower the number of seats on the Ninth Circuit courts to 8 instead of 11. And they're trying to claim that there's not enough work for all these judges, that if you appoint all these judges, they're not going to have enough work to actually take up their time, which is complete horse hockey. I'm sure anybody out there who's listening who knows anything about the legal system or the circuit courts is just going, what the fuck? Because literally, even though there aren't that many cases argued in front of the Ninth Circuit Court, it's a very, mm-hmm. very busy court, because there's a lot of effort that goes into all these cases. There's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of research. In fact, a lot of things that the Supreme Court uses to help decide their cases is information that was gathered by the Ninth Circuit Court. So there's a tremendous amount of research and looking into things and really delving in to the facts of a case that the Ninth Circuit Court has done. And right now, the Ninth Circuit Court has 8 people, and there are 4 conservatives and 4 liberals. And the Republicans don't want 3 more progressives put on that court, because it would pretty much give a progressive majority to that court probably for the next 20 years, because these are lifetime appointments. So
right. Yeah.
What happened, though, is that after repeatedly blocking these judges, and the Senate has not wanted to change any rules, because they're very – even the most liberal senator is very conservative when it comes to Senate rules, especially the ones who learn how to use the rules. They tend not to like change. And a lot of Democrats for a long time in the Senate were resisting changing the rules of the filibuster because, again, there's nothing constitutional about the filibuster. It's purely a mechanical thing. It is a structural thing that the Senate has. It's their own rules. And at the beginning of every new Senate session, they vote whether or not to keep the rules as they are or to make any changes. And that's something that actually can't be filibustered. And Harry Reid, at the beginning of this latest session, decided to hold the question of the filibuster open and not have it be settled, so that any time that they would deem it necessary, they could go back and revisit the rule and change the rules when it came to filibusters on anything. They've kept that prerogative open. And they
wow.
and after having all of these we haven't had a director of the Department of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the ATF. We haven't had a director of the ATF since Barack Obama's been in office. The Republicans have completely shut that down. They haven't allowed the Consumer Protection Board that was created by legislation. They haven't allowed anybody to run that. They haven't allowed most of the departments that they don't like. They're hoping that if they keep a permanent person out of the job, then that department's not going to be able to function properly and give them more reason to argue to people that they just need to do away with things like the ATF or the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and that kind of thing. And finally, the Democrats had enough. After all 3 of President Obama's nominees for the circuit court were all filibustered again, even though Republicans had promised that they were only going to filibuster in extreme circumstances, they still filibustered every single person that came down the pike. They came and changed the rules, and they said you can't filibuster presidential appointees to the judiciary and to certain government departments. The only ones that they preserved are things like the Supreme Court and that kind of stuff, because Democrats want to keep that available to them in case some crazy Republican gets in there and decides to try to appoint Glenn Beck to the Supreme Court. But all the other federal judiciary, there is no more filibuster for these things, and they're finally getting these nominations through.
I think this is going to bite us in the ass, though, don't you? Don't you think, like, these new rules could potentially be harmful to our side?
Not necessarily, because for 2 reasons. For one thing, this Democrats don't fuck with the rules the way the Republicans do. They just don't. Even times when people on the left were screaming for the Democrats to filibuster some of these rather wacky people that George W. Bush wanted to appoint to certain jobs, the Democrats wouldn't filibuster them just because they were so-called keeping their powder dry for someone who was just a complete and total whack job. As a matter of fact, in the entire 8 years of the Bush presidency, there was one judge that was filibustered the whole time. That's it. Bush got all the rest of his people in there. So Democrats don't really like to use these type of tactics just because they actually believe in that elections have consequences and that the government should basically work. But also another thing you have to realize is that I really don't think that the Republicans are going to get a majority in the Senate again until it's a vastly different Republican party than what we have right now. Because the last two elections in a row, everyone was saying that the Republicans in any other election year, in any other political climate, during these last two elections, 2012 and 2010, the Republicans should have been able to take control of the Senate. They really mm-hmm. should have. The electoral map was more favorable to them. They had very few seats to defend. They had way more pickup opportunities. They had Democrats coming up for reelection in very conservative red states. Mm-hmm. For example, in Missouri, there's a woman named Claire McCaskill who was a freshman senator for the Democratic Party. It was her first term, and in 2012 was the first time that she was coming up for re-election. Now, Missouri has been trending very, very red. Mitt Romney mm-hmm. won the state by a pretty decent margin. And increasingly, they've been electing more and more conservative people to state offices and that kind of thing over and over again. And Claire McCaskill had a very low approval rate. She actually had higher disapproval numbers than she had approval numbers, which is considered very dicey for mm-hmm. anybody seeking reelection. And even a lot of people on the Democratic side are saying, you know what, we're probably going to lose Claire McCaskill's seat just because there's very little to no chance that the Republicans are going to nominate somebody who's so fucked up that a very unpopular liberal woman could beat them in a very conservative Republican state. And then the Republicans nominated a guy by the name of Todd Akin.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Todd mm-hmm. Legitimate Rape Akin.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Who really, when it comes down to it, the guy was just voicing the mainstream opinions of today's Republican Party. There's a lot of people in the Republican Party who oppose abortion for women who are victims of rape or incest, and they will use all kinds of really, really dubious science. As a matter of fact, a lot of the pseudoscience that Republicans quote, basically they like to say that genuine rape victims tend not to get pregnant from the attacks because the female body, when it's been traumatized, doesn't ovulate regularly and doesn't have the right kind of environment for a fertilized egg to attach to the uterine wall. And because of that, if a woman is pregnant and she says she was raped, their attitude is that she's probably lying. And the thing is that the entire medical basis that they based this theory on was from a study that was originally conducted by Nazi doctors in the Third Reich who were studying Jewish women who were on their way to execution and checking to see if their bodies ovulated like normal.
Wow.
And there was a lot of pseudoscience and a lot of racist science in there, not really science, just pseudo, you know, racist pseudo theory. And this uh-huh. and these is the basis of all the studies that Republicans use to justify the idea of denying abortion to rape victims by saying that if it's a legitimate rape, the female body has a way of shutting that whole thing down. And Todd Akin came out, and his mistake was that he actually said it out loud. And he didn't just say it out loud to a room full of Republican donors. He said uh-huh. it on television during a live debate. And mm-hmm. Todd Akin was so, I mean, really, when he did that, it was so boneheaded that literally even the vast majority of right-wingers were like, oh, dude, you just begged yourself up over and fucked yourself. But, and again, in most sane, rational, political years, somebody who had done that big of a boneheaded screw-up would have dropped out of the race and let his party put someone in there who didn't have such severe foot-and-mouth disease to, again, walk away with the Senate seat and defeat the Democratic woman who has very high unfavorable ratings and very low favorables. But Todd Akin is a true believer type of jihadist, and he was going to stay in there. He wasn't going to let the political machinery of Washington chase him out of the race, and he had all of his Tea Party buddies standing up and saying, hell yeah, Todd, you go get him. And he went to go get him, and Claire McCaskill handed him his ass on a platter. There was another incident where in 2010, Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, was in trouble. He was in trouble electorally because he had a very low popularity in his home state. Harry Reid is from Arizona. It's a very conservative state. And a lot of people are saying that this is a prime opportunity for the Republicans to come in and defeat the sitting House Majority Leader, which is a pretty big symbolic victory. And also, because, you know, Harry Reid is a pro. He's got a lot of favors built up. He's a very effective guy when he wants to use the tools that he has. And they and the Republicans were like, okay, we got to take this guy out. And they had an establishment guy, I can't even remember the guy's name, one of these milquetoast Republicans who could have walked in there and said, vote for me because I'm not him, and he probably would have won. But no, the Tea Party decided to get involved in Arizona and nominated a woman named Sharon Angle. Yes, Sharon Angle made Michelle Bachmann look like Eleanor Roosevelt. This woman was seriously unhinged. This is the woman who was talking openly about Second Amendment remedies to election outcomes that people didn't like, that kind of shit. Literally, the woman was batshit crazy. She was so batshit crazy that, oh, my God, I mean, Rand Paul would look at her and go, lady, you got to calm down. We're just talking just completely batshit crazy. And, again, Republicans have snatched the defeat from the jaws of victory. And they keep doing this. In South Carolina, there's going to be an open Senate seat there. Now, South Carolina should be a no-brainer. I mean, it's an off-year election next year. It's a pretty conservative state. And pretty much there was a poll done that said that any Republican who runs is probably going to win this. The only way that the Republican Party could screw up is if they nominated somebody who was ridiculously radical right, like somebody who had ties to, like neo-Confederate organizations, openly racist neo-Confederate secessionist organizations. That's the only way that they could screw up. If they nominated somebody like that, they could probably lose that seat. And the guy who's running first in the polls for the Republican nomination used to be the vice president of a neo-Confederate openly racist organization. So so I'm really not worried about losing the Senate anytime soon because just Republicans keep, you know, there in my state of Ohio, the Ohio voters are very weird. Ohio voters tend to vote Democratic for president, and yet when it comes to our statewide offices, they tend to vote for Republicans a lot. And at one point, I think the Republican Party in Ohio just wanted to try and experiment. They wanted to experiment and see how batshit crazy could we go with our nominee before even Ohio voters go, oh, hell no. And a couple of elections ago, they ran a guy named Ken Blackwell. Ken Blackwell, who, you know, his claim to fame was that he liked to hold pictures of aborted fetuses and talk about genocide and that kind of stuff. A complete and total whack job. And the Ohio Republican Party ran this guy, and that's why we had Democrat Ted Strickland as our governor for 4 years. It seems like the National Republican Party is engaged in the same game right now. How fucking batshit crazy can we go before even states like Mississippi go, oh, fuck no, we just can't. We just can't do it. And they're really seem to be genuinely trying.
Wow.
Wow. The stupid it hurts, I know.
My dad's hurt. My ears hurt.
So I have the hot button issue. Healthcare.
Uh-huh. Healthcare. Yes.
Go.
Well, you know, here's a funny thing that's going on here right now. One of the things, one of the few things that the Supreme Court did, the monkey with the Affordable Care Act, when they ruled on it this past summer, is that they said that states were going to have to be able to opt out of Medicaid expansion. And what this is basically part of Obamacare, part of the Affordable Care Act, was where the federal government was saying that they were going to give the states billions of dollars to expand Medicaid, which is the state, you know, the state sponsored health care for poor people. See, right now, under the old rules, Medicaid was capped at the poverty line. So if you were at or below the poverty line, you could get Medicaid, which I've been on Medicaid. Medicaid fucking rocks. I mean, when people talk about government-sponsored health care, if everybody had what people on Medicaid had, you would be skipping in the streets because you pay no copay for doctor's visits. There's no copay for medications unless it's a name brand. If it's a name brand medication, you pay $2. But you don't pay anything for hospital visits. You pay nothing for hospital admissions or testing or preventative care or any of that. Okay, Medicaid's a pretty sweet deal. And part of Obamacare is to help insure people at the lower end of the spectrum where you could expand it to somebody whose income was 135% of the poverty level or lower. And it was basically something where they were saying, we're going to give you this money. You know, going to the States, we're going to give you this money. You don't have to pay any of it. We're going to pay for the Medicaid expansion. And it seemed like a pretty sweet deal, and any state with a governor who has a brain is taking it because you're talking about millions of your citizens covered without the state having to spend a dime. But ever since the Supreme Court said that states could opt out of it, there are Republican governors who have decided to reject Medicaid expansion on principle. They're just not going to, and they don't get the money to do anything else with. It's not like if they turn down the Medicaid expansion that they're going to have money to like build roads or something. No, they just don't get the money. And so some of the states where they have the highest concentration of uninsured people, places like Texas and Mississippi and Louisiana and that kind of stuff, these are the states that have all decided to reject Medicaid expansion. The state of Ohio, actually, even though we have a Republican governor and a Republican legislature, the Republican governor, who's going to have to run for reelection next year, decided that he really wanted to take the expanded Medicaid money. The Republican legislature tried to prevent him from doing that, but he did a nice little bureaucratic maneuver and completely did an end run around them and got the money anyway. So people in Ohio, if you make 135% of the poverty level or lower, you can go and get Medicaid, and it's a pretty sweet deal. Now, the thing about this is that's one of the reasons why there's around 5 million people who are dirt poor who are going to remain uninsured because they make too much for Medicaid, but they don't make enough for the subsidies that are going to help a lot of other people to pay for their health care. Now, since these people are caught in a unique situation, they're not going to be penalized. These people, even if they're not covered, are not going to have to pay any sort of fine or penalty like what would happen if you could afford health insurance and just chose not to get it. But it's still going to leave around 5 million people in this country uninsured. And that's enough of a tragedy. But another thing that's going on now, though, is that the thing about Medicaid is that Medicaid has never been at 100% of its eligible enrollment in most states because there's a lot of people who really could get Medicaid but don't think that they can. You know, people who are, like, really close to that poverty line, they don't think that they can get Medicaid, so they never look into it, and they just don't know. But now that people are being told that if you don't have insurance, you could wind up paying a fine, that's causing a lot of people, including people in these states that have not taken the Medicaid expansion, to look into their options. They're actually investigating and seeing, what's my options for getting health care because I don't want to pay the fine. And a lot of these people who are eligible for Medicaid but just weren't on it are all of a sudden discovering, oh, my God, I could be on Medicaid. And so Medicaid enrollments in all across the country are surging. Medicaid enrollments are, we're getting like, there in like 1 month alone, there's something like 450,000 new people on Medicaid nationwide.
Wow.
But states that rejected the Medicaid expansion money are now finding that they're getting thousands of people who are joining Medicaid who were always eligible but just didn't know it. So now all of a sudden these states are not only not getting the billions of dollars from the federal government for expanding Medicaid, they're going to be losing hundreds of millions and possibly billions of dollars because people who could have been on Medicaid before and weren't are now going to be on Medicaid. So these states are going to have to make up the difference with their taxpayers instead of taking the money from the government, which would have been the smart thing to do.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
So in,
yeah.
So in spite of the website difficulties, you know, it's hilarious. Bill Maher had made a comment. I can wait 6 hours plus to set up my iPhone, and you're going to bitch about waiting an hour online to get your health care? Really?
Now actually pretty much. I mean, the healthcare.gov website can handle a million people an hour now with no problems. They fix the bugs. You know, and you know, you talk to any IT person, anybody who does websites for a living, and they'll tell you that when you're launching a brand new website, especially one that's as database heavy as healthcare.gov, you know, if you didn't expect problems, then you were living in a fucking fantasy land. The fact that they managed to fix the vast majority of these problems within a month is nothing short of a miracle. And now that, you know, and so, and also another thing that happened too, don't forget, is that the whole thing about people whining about losing shitty insurance has been fixed. Because one thing that happened was that there were a lot of health insurance plans that used to be sold that are now illegal under Obamacare, like these plans that have ridiculously low lifetime caps, ones that really don't pay for anything. I mean, I was offered one of these plans when I was working at a call center some years ago. This was back before I had kids. And it was this health insurance called Starbridge. And this was shitty insurance. I mean, literally, you paid a premium every month. You had something like a $2,000 deductible before they would pay for anything. And they had a yearly cap of $5,000 on your entire policy. So this is the kind of stuff where you're basically paying to be uninsured. Because if you get taken to the emergency room once, there goes your $5,000 yearly cap. And when you're working for minimum wage at a call center, having to spend $2,000 of your own money before your insurance will pay for a dime of anything, you might as well not even be insured, because you sure as hell aren't going to go to a doctor unless you're literally bleeding out of both eyes, because you just can't afford to spend $2,000 out of your own pocket. And these are the type of plans under Obamacare that are now illegal. You can't have these anymore. And those were the plans that were supposed to be canceled so that people could get new and better plans. Well, one thing that happened was that a lot of health insurance companies decided to take advantage of the general confusion and cancel plans that were legal under Obamacare. But then they would blame Obamacare for it. And even at that, when these companies would cancel these plans, even the shitty plans, they would then say, okay, well, we're canceling your $50 a month plan, and unless you tell us otherwise, we'll move you on to this $500 a month plan. And people were up and on. It's like, look, every business is going to try to sell you the most expensive plan they have. It's called sales.
You start high,
and when somebody says, fuck you, you must be high, then you start whittling down until you get to a plan that they like. It's a basic sales technique. But, of course, you had all these people on the right, and a lot of people, really, really unscrupulous people in the media, really helping them with these stories about saying, Obamacare has raised my premiums 500%. And it's like, no, your insurance company tried that, and you don't have to take it. That's the nice thing about the health insurance exchanges. You can go out, if you don't like what your health insurance company is offering you, you can go out on these exchanges and take a look with a real simple, basic apples-to-apples comparison of what the different plans are, what they offer, what they cover, what they don't cover, and make your own decision. decision. I mean, really, the central core of the Affordable Care Act is free market forces for competition between health insurance companies driving down costs. Now, take a look at a state like Kentucky that has a Democratic governor that has embraced Obamacare. And the Kentucky Exchange that they call Connect, with a K, has been working perfectly. It's been working marvelously all along. And a lot of people are getting covered on there. They took the expanded Medicaid money, so they've got hundreds of thousands of people in Kentucky who are covered under Medicaid. You're getting hundreds of thousands of people who never had insurance before are now finding out with the government subsidies that they're getting it for very low cost to them, very, very affordable. It's been a huge success story. Another thing that hurt the government website, thehealthcare.gov, is the fact that just about every single state that had a Republican governor refused to set up a state-run healthcare exchange, and they just shoved all their people off onto the federal sites, which kind of led to the federal site being kind of overloaded. So that was another thing that happened. In the blue states where people didn't fight this at every step and every turn, it's been working great. I mean, people are getting on. They're getting covered. They're saving a lot of money. In New York State, healthcare premiums are dropping by as much as 50% just off of the basic free market competition on the New York State Exchange.
Wow.
People are fighting this?
Because it's like you get people, you know, again, you get people, some people, a lot of times you're getting people who have just been too busy to learn about the law, and they're hearing all kinds of shit. Everybody who has this thing against really tan-looking people in office are spreading all these Obamacare horror stories. There's been a lot of outright lies and misinformation, and people get freaked out. And then when they have their health insurance policy get canceled and they get offered some ridiculously expensive thing, they start to freak out, and there's been a lot of confusion about this. But I'll tell you, anybody who thinks that this is going to be a bad issue for the Democrats come next autumn is high, because Americans have a notoriously short attention span for these things. I mean, already the Obamacare horror stories are already fading into the background. And by I predict that by around March or April, you're going to have a lot of people who are just going to be either not caring about it because they really turned out they weren't affected, or they were affected in a very positive manner. Once, you know, as things go on, by the time next autumn rolls around, anybody who's running on an Obamacare repeal is probably going to really face some extremely – they're already facing stiff competition. In Louisiana, there was a runoff election between three Republicans, and the Republican who went on the standard party line of repeal Obamacare, yada, 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 he lost. He lost to a Republican that was running on the idea of keep Obamacare but fix the bucks. And so – that's already a case in Louisiana, a very conservative place, where a Republican ran against another Republican on the left on Obamacare and won. So anybody who's predicting any problems for Democrats in next year elections based on Obamacare, I think are going to be in for a very rude awakening.
Wow. Okay, I got two things to say. First of all, hi, Rob, because he's listening in tonight, yeah. So I just wanted to say, hey. Second of all,
I shouldn't fucking swear too much, man.
Huh?
Sure. Did you say hi, Mom?
No. Oh, God, are you kidding me? My mom knows, I swear. No, my friend Rob.
Rob, okay. Well, then, fuck it. Well, yeah, that's where I want to, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, he runs Shards of Yadstrill, if I'm saying that right. And if not, he's
Yadstrill.
Yes, thank you.
Gracias.
second thing I've got to say. Now, we just had an election here in North Carolina, like, I don't know, what was it, back in October or the beginning of November.
Right.
You know, and I went and voted. And it was like even a couple days before then, they are already starting ad campaigns for Kate Hagan. You know, they were already starting a smear campaign. And the election for that is not going to be for, like, another fucking year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, And it's like, so she has had to try to combat that. And it's like, at this point, I don't even want to vote. Because I'm just so damn annoyed at seeing her face. I mean, and I like her. But I'm just so damn annoyed that they're already starting this. It's like, can we not have a fucking break in between?
I know. I know.
Why are they starting so early?
Well, they're starting so early because, you know, because they're, people aren't learning the right lessons from these past elections. And because one of the general rules of elections is the earlier that you can define your opponents, if you can define your opponent before they have a chance to define themselves, then you have a much better chance of beating them in the general election. But what people need to realize is that they really need to watch out for campaign fatigue, because you can alienate people through doing things too ridiculously early. Now, I will say that the hardcore right wing doesn't really care. The hardcore right wing is looking for any way that they can to drive down the number of people who vote, because the ridiculously insane jihadists, they're going to come out and vote for their, you know, for their favorite jihadist candidates no matter what, come hell or high water. They're going to come out and vote for these people. But I can't help but wonder if there isn't some sort of a concerted campaign from the very far right to try to whip things up and make it extremely ugly as early as they can, hopefully to make people not even want to come out and vote so that their crazy little minority will have an even bigger voice than it already has right now in politics. I certainly wouldn't put it past them.
Wow. You know, that makes a lot of sense.
I personally would love to see a new, and it would take a constitutional amendment to do this, but I would really like to see a new constitutional amendment passed that would, one, get rid of any and all private money out of political campaigns and make every single campaign publicly funded.
Yay.
Yes, but also I would like to see a system similar to what they have in England, where literally an election is announced. There's no campaigning before the election is announced. There's a six-week campaign period, and then they have their election, and they're done. I think that would be very nice, because everybody knows that elections are going to be coming next autumn. I would love to see a complete and utter ban on all political advertising up until, say, September of 2014. And then you have September and October, first week in November, you have your election, and then you're done. So public financing of campaigns and a truncated campaign season, I think, would probably be two of the better things. And also, I think that universal voting by mail across the country is another thing that I would like to see happen, just so, again, because that's one of the ways that Republicans try to suppress the vote, is by making it ridiculously difficult for people to vote in Democratic districts. You know, like in a Republican district, you wait 10 minutes to vote. In a Democratic district, you wait 4 or 5 hours to vote. I think if we had nationwide mail-in ballots, then that would just kind of take care of that entirely. Washington State already has that. They actually don't – I think it's Washington State. They would, correct me if I'm wrong. Somebody out there will. But there's a state in the Pacific Northwest, I like to think it's Washington, that doesn't actually have polling places anymore. Every single registered voter is mailed a ballot, and they mail it in by a certain date, and then on election day, they count all the votes. And they just don't bother with setting up polling places at all anymore.
And that eliminates primaries, does it not?
No, it doesn't, because they also do primaries the same way. It's just primaries.
Oh.
Everybody for, you know, if you're a Democrat, you get a Democratic ballot to pick the Democrats you want to have run in the general, and then it's all mailed in. And on primary day, the votes are all counted, and it's just taken care of like that. You know, so and I'll tell you this, too. If people really want to affect the political process, if people really want to get involved and get a better quality of candidates involved in these general elections, there's really only one thing that you can do. You need to get involved in the primaries. You need to get involved early on, educate yourself about people who are running. If you don't like the people who are running, think about running yourself, or if you're not going to run, find somebody else who you think would be good and try to start a draft campaign to get that person to run. But in primaries is our chance to really affect things, to get rid of people out of the Democratic Party who don't really belong there. I mean, that's how we got Joe Lieberman out of the party, was we primaried his ass and kicked him out. Primaries are where you can get rid of the corporate Dems who really are dinos, Democrat in name only. Primaries are your opportunity to get good progressive candidates in there. Because I'll tell you, there's a lot of instances in this country where there are Republicans have gerrymandered districts to the point where there are safe Democratic districts. Whoever wins the primary is going to win the general in those districts. So we got to get involved in primaries to make sure that really good, solid, populist, progressive candidates are getting nominated, because if we don't get them nominated, there's no way to actually get them into the job. You know, a lot of people are inspired by Elizabeth Warren. Well, we need a Senate with 99 more Elizabeth Warrens, but we're not going to do it as long as they keep nominating people Warner from Virginia in the primaries. If you want more Elizabeth Warrens, we got to get them in the primary. And that's the way that you can create the most positive change.
Wow. True. Can't argue with that.
How do we get involved in the primaries?
Well, you get involved with your local – you can get involved through local progressive activist groups. A great place to find your local progressives is to go on a website called Daily Kos. DailyKos.com. It's the biggest political blog on the internet. It's been a force for progressive politics for damn near a decade now. That's a place whenever I'm on here and I'm making my electoral predictions and I'm predicting this person's going to win, that person's going to win, and people are going, oh my God, I don't know, it seems awfully close, and yet the people I pick win. I'm not picking them. I'm reading it right off of Daily Kos. They've really got their finger on the pulse of the progressive movement, and they're reality-based. If a Democratic candidate isn't going to win, they're going to be honest. They're going to tell you that this person probably isn't going to win. That's why we're not as fantasy-based as the Republicans are. But go on Daily Kos, because on there you're going to be able to find activists from your state, from your area, and you're going to be able to find out who are the candidates that people are talking about. You know, what's the research on them? What's their record like? And you can find out a lot just by looking online and getting involved with, progressive groups in your state to get behind a good candidate early and do some real fundraising and door-to-door work for them and try to create some momentum behind them. Because the earlier you get momentum behind them, the more of a force they have going into the primary.
Yeah. Interesting.
I've been involved in Daily Kos for a long time. You look at my user ID on there, it's like a 4-digit user ID. They're up to like 6 digits now. I mean, literally, if Daily Kos was a newspaper, it would be the 5th largest circulating newspaper in the country.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have Netroots Nation every summer that they do, where you will literally have people like, in 2008 when he was running for president, Barack Obama came by Netroots Nation, the big yearly convention that the Daily Kos crew puts on. So you have national politicians coming there and giving major policy speeches. As a matter of fact, the change in the filibuster rules, the original idea for changing these rules came from David Waldman, who goes by the name of Cargo X on Daily Kos. And the idea was birthed on Daily Kos, and it was through things like the Netroots Nation conference in the summertime that people at Daily Kos started to hammer that idea home to Democratic lawmakers that this is something you guys need to do. So something that was conceived of on a progressive Netroots website is now law. So that just shows you what can happen when you can really put the force of the people behind it.
Yeah, that's true. Daily Kos. It's a guilty pleasure.
It's fun.
It is fun.
I don't blog on there as much as I should, but I've got the old name of Hippie Witch on there. That's my screen name. So.
Oh, that's you. Okay.
Hippie Witch is me.
Yeah, I figured. That makes sense. It makes perfect sense. I actually wanted to I wanted to ask you if you had seen this thing that I saw on Facebook earlier. It's this fake ad, I think, from the Brady Organization, and it's a woman holding a gun. Are you familiar with this particular ad?
No, I have not seen that.
Have you heard of it? It's apparently a Brady Law bill fake that if you're raped, you don't need a gun. Put the gun down and let the police do their job.
what?
And the funny thing about this is that I noticed that most of the people in this one particular discussion were male. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the best people 9 times out of 10, because yes, men do get raped, but 9 times out of 10, women are the people who are the victims of this crime. Am I right?
Well, yeah, not just that, but it's also the entire rape culture is aimed at women. The entire, the fact that, you know, we have a culture that teaches young women on how not to get raped, but it doesn't seem to take the same time in teaching young men to not rape people. So, yeah.
Well, the debate that this apparent ad is supposed to raise is if a woman would be allowed to carry a gun, should she shoot her rapist? You know, I'm not ashamed to admit that I've been a victim of this crime, and it's not that I would want to necessarily murder. Of course, you feel like you want to murder the other person at that point,
right.
But I would think that having gone through this actually more than once, my biggest thing would be to have the person who did this to me suffer a similar devastating humiliation like I did.
Right.
Kind of along an eye for an eye type of thing more than a actual bullet to the brain type of thing.
Well, not just that, but, you know, when you have women, the thing is that statistically, and I'm just going off of science here, I'm not going off of these passionate anecdotal things that the gun nuts always like to throw around to people. I'm going off of, you know, silly little things like facts and figures. Most people who are shot are shot with their own gun. And if you have more young women carrying guns around, worried about getting raped, what you're going to wind up is you're going to have more rapists who have guns because they take them off their victims. And, you know, then you have a situation where not only is a woman raped, but possibly a victim of murder at the hands of her own gun. And, you know, it's just, you know, the solution to violence isn't let's have more guns. Because I'll tell you, every week Daily Coast puts out a thing called Gun Sale, where they list not bad guys with guns, not criminals with guns, but ordinary Americans who are shot and wounded and even killed in incidences of, you know, not crimes, where, you know, somebody is showing a gun to a friend and it goes off and it goes through the wall and shoots someone in the apartment next door, or where somebody's kid gets a hold of a gun and shoots their sibling, or the favorite ones are people who are cleaning loaded weapons. Now, of course, you don't know what really happened in these situations, but the whole, I was just cleaning my gun and it went off type of dodge, probably someone trying to cover up to doing something really stupid with a gun. But again, you know, that's the thing. Everybody who has a gun is a quote-unquote responsible gun owner until they do something stupid. And just all these things that you see over and over again, I mean, there was a case I was reading about today about a 55-year-old woman who had gotten into a violent argument with her boyfriend, and she had actually wound up pistol-whipping her boyfriend, beating him up with a gun, and then she hears a knock on her door. And it wasn't necessarily a pounding, it was a knock, and she was afraid that it was her boyfriend come back, so she shoots through the door. And she winds up shooting her own daughter in the chest and kills her. Her daughter was holding her grandchild. And the bullet came within a half an inch of hitting the grandchild, too. And the whole time, this boyfriend that she was so worried about coming back was still in the hospital getting stitched up from when she beat him with the gun. So it's just like, you know, it's you when people say, oh, well, you know, such and such a thing happened, you'd wish you'd had a gun. It's like, you know, a lot of times when this shit happens, you know, when somebody has a gun, it just adds a layer of tragedy. And yeah, it's just, you know, that's what people have got to remember. And, you know, just because you have a gun on you doesn't mean that somebody isn't going to take it from you. I mean, that's just the whole thing. And then you wind up getting shot with your own gun. So, you know, things like that, that you know, I'm sure I'm going to see that phony ad eventually, just because, you know, I wind up seeing everything on there eventually. I've got a rather bizarre mix of people who come through my Facebook list. And I wind up seeing a lot of shit. I'll have some, you know, what I usually do is that is I like to throw up a bunch of statistics about women getting shot by their own gun and let that speak for it.
Yeah. Well, see, now, I don't know. I think people, you know, I don't believe in taking all guns away.
No, nobody ever talks about that.
No, I like guns, actually. Guns don't bother me. I'm an avid liker of guns. I have no problem with guns.
Guns and knives are cool, but you got to know how to use them. I'm sorry, you know, if you need to have a license to drive a car, you know, I mean, you should be required to have training to use a firearm. Because, you know, I mean, like one of my godfathers down here, he lives in the town over from me, he runs a gun range.
Right.
And it's like, you know, yes, do it appropriately, but I'm sorry, I don't care what anybody says. Nobody needs an AK-47. I don't give a shit. You don't need one.
Nobody needs an AR-15, you know?
No.
Right.
Not much.
And nobody needs a clip that holds 100 rounds.
Exactly. Bambi's not going to run that far for you to have to use that many. And if you have to take that
exactly.
fucking shot, you don't need to be hunting.
See, I actually think that the way that we could change the gun culture in the biggest way is to require people to own guns to carry insurance. Because let's face it, you know, if I want to have a music concert in the park, I've got to carry liability insurance. And that's just for having a bunch of hippie bands playing in the park in the sunshine. If you want to have a car, you've got to have insurance on that car. So in case you do something stupid and you hurt somebody or damage somebody else's property with your car, then they're not going to be financially liable. So too, that if you're doing gun owner's doing something stupid like cleaning a loaded gun and their gun goes off and wounds somebody, why should that person have to worry about paying their insurance copays and all that for it? No, I mean, you should have liability insurance for a gun, too. And, you know, if you had that type of thing, you would see more people using locked gun safes to store their weapons because the insurance would say, well, if you have a locked gun safe for your weapon, we're going to give you a break on your gun insurance and that kind of thing. The financial incentives to get people to do the right thing that they wouldn't do just because it's the right thing. So requiring gun insurance, I think, would be a great way of just generally increasing a culture of safety.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I know a lot of people are going to fight that, you know, and it's just,
but there,
well, because
there are people, car insurance.
Huh?
There are people who fight car insurance too, but you know.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Oh yeah. Oh, and Dorian, I gave Dorian some homework yesterday.
Yes, you did.
Did you?
I haven't responded to it yet, but yes, I will read over it.
Yes,
Absolutely.
I'm looking to do a new film project coming up here, and I'm starting to have some people read some scripts that I'm thinking of reworking. I'm also going to work on a brand new script, but I'm not sure where I want to go with my next project yet, so I'm getting some feedback on some of the screenplays that I've written that I may wind up reworking for my next project. So I gave Dorian some homework. Raina, if you want me to send it to you, I'd be more than happy to let you read over it. I just want feedback. So,
yes, please.
Okay, well, Facebook me your email address, and I'll send it to you.
Okay, I will do that now. Ha-ha.
Ha-ha. And by the way, yes, I do use OpenOffice as well.
Awesome, so I'll be able to send all this stuff in ODT.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, and if not, I can always reformat it to go to whatever I need.
There you go. Hey, where's my new message? Oh, okay, there it is. Ha, 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 ha. There you are. Ha, 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 ha. I am going to send you a message right now. Yes, I am. Okay. So, Talzin, I have to ask you for next month.
Yeah.
I have to ask you. We have a gentleman, my sister said hello to him earlier. I just sent you my email address. There you
Ta-da.
Go. Ta-da. But we have a gentleman that is a friend of the show that would like to actually debate you.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yes.
That could be fun.
I think it could be, too. So we're going to talk to you and talk to him after the show in the next, I would say, in the next few days or so and see what we can set up. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think?
Oh, that could totally be fun. I certainly, you know, anybody who's hung out on my threads on Facebook knows that I can certainly be up to a nice spirited debate.
I have had spirited debates on the air with this gentleman. And I love him to death. I don't agree with a lot of the things he says, but he and I do see eye to eye on certain things. So I just think it would be fantastic to have the four of us on the air doing this thing live. I think it would be a riot and a half.
I will be
So you want us to have a four-way, huh? Okay.
Well, baby,
you're going to have to wear a kilt, too. Because he wears a kilt sometimes, if we have to.
But I'm not Scottish. I'm Irish. I'm not Scottish.
That's okay.
Actually, I'm part of a trend that comes off of Gardnerianism. I could just be naked. So
there you go. You and I will be naked because I'm Gardnerian. There you go. And their team can wear
kilts. Skyclad debate.
Hey, I love it. Oh, this is great. We may have to do pictures, too.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be Skyping if I'm naked, though. Yeah.
All right, fine, chicken. Anyway, but I think it could be a lot of fun. So you heard it here first, folks. Next month, the first Friday of next month, January, we are going to have a live political debate. I can't wait. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, and then that tendency that I have to be able to talk for 20 minutes without taking a discernible breath is really going to come in handy. So.
Well, I think he can, too, so it's going to be pretty interesting. I think Sis and I are going to have coffee.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny, too, because I'm going to be in the middle of doing a lot of screenwriting at the time, and whenever that happens, I wind up having a lot of one-liners ready to go. So it's probably going to be a fairly snarky, fun time. So
I think it'll be hilarious. I hope Mr. Grillo is up very excited at the prospect thereof. I know he had expressed an interest during the show tonight of being on. So bring it, baby. That's what I'm going to say to him.
He is on the line if you wouldn't mind him coming on for a moment just to say hi.
Oh, sure. I would love that. I would love that. Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Sure.
Come on, bring it.
Introduce you guys.
Well, am I on?
No. Yes, you're
on.
You women's. What's going on?
Hello.
Much. How you doing, baby?
What's up?
So, Rob, this is Talzin. Talzin, this is Rob. Gentlemen, say hello.
Howdy.
Howdy.
And I'm from
say howdy at the same time. Yeah.
I'm from liberal hell up here in Massachusetts, and I'm saying howdy. Figure that one out.
I'm from Ohio. I'm from Ohio, and I said howdy. So, I mean, of course, could just be all the Blake Shelton I've been listening to lately, but, you know, that'll happen.
Blake Shelton, what the hell is that?
Country music singer. He's one of the four judges on The Voice. Miranda Lambert's husband, but yeah.
I still have no clue who the hell you're talking about.
I listen to real music. Well, I listen to a ridiculous amount of music, but my kids are used to me listening to Tim McGraw and Slayer. So,
well, let's just put it like this. The music I listen to makes Slayer sound like Tiny Tim.
Oh,
my goodness.
You know, just so that you know, I mean, the ladies know, I am a devout pagan. My company, I make spiritual tools. I make wands, spirit boards, great wands, rune sets, all hand carved out of wood. I'm now an ordained reverend, and I'm also a Republican.
Yeah, well, I'm a filmmaker. I made Dark of Moon, the first film ever set in the neo-pagan world. It's not a documentary. It's a good old-fashioned romantic comedy. And I'm a little bit to the left of Mao Zedong politically, so that works.
I would say, unfortunately, I am what I believe in what the Republican Party used to be, not what it is now.
Used to be.
Oh, you're like talking about like the Bob Dole Republicans, basically.
No, I'm talking about the Republicans that actually free the slaves instead of the Democrats who try to keep them slaves.
Okay. The Republicans before the Southern Strategy came into play, yes.
Yeah, I'm more of a conservative than anything else. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this because you guys just started talking about the one thing that I am absolutely vehemently opposed to. And, yeah, we're going to have fun.
Yeah, it's going to be some kind of fun. I don't know what kind yet, but it's going to be some kind of fun.
You know, I absolutely firmly believe that what makes us individuals, which makes us the thing that makes us sentient individuals, the thing that makes us unique is that we all have our opinions. And unfortunately, opinions are a lot like assholes. If you can get into a spirited debate with somebody and use intelligence in that and actually say, you know what, you have your opinion, I have my opinion, this is what I'm bringing to the table, this is what you're bringing to the table, I respect you for your passion, and you need to respect the other person for their passion. That's, unfortunately, in politics, religion, and anything else today, that's what we've lost sight on. People can't really just say, you know what, all right, you have your opinion, that's fine, I have my opinion. Instead, people go to blows over it.
One of the unfortunate things that happens too is the fact that you wind up getting people who are much more concerned about what I say marketing over genuine reason and genuine debate. You get people who wind up are more concerned about how does an idea test? How do people react when they hear it, which are all marketing ideas, as opposed to, is this true? I mean, is this, can I bring up some science or some sort of demonstrable fact to pick it up? And I have arguments with people, my friends on the left, all the time about the need to make sure that we argue things from a point of science and verifiable information and, you know, not just going off of knee-jerk emotional responses. I know one of the arguments I get into a lot with some of my friends on the left is the whole idea of genetically modified foods. I mean, I have, you know, I think they need to be labeled. I think people need to be informed as to where they're at. But there are a few cases where genetically modifying an organism can bring about a verifiable, scientific, genuine good thing for society without really a whole lot of downsides to it. And, you know, things like putting a little vitamin A into rice to help people in the third world from going blind and that kind of stuff. They call it golden rice. Little things like that that I think people on the left need to admit that there are good things that come of it and not just focus on the fear-mongering, the scare campaigns, and that kind of thing, to make sure that even in opposition to something, that we're honest and we take a look at all the facts and don't just fall back on, you know, slogans and things that feel good to us but may not necessarily be scientifically accurate. I mean, definitely label stuff, make sure people are making an informed decision, but you can't demonize everything just because some aspects of it are kind of fucked up and being abused.
Agreed.
Yeah. So, I'd like to see more political people argue things from the basis of fact.
I told Hot Mama over here that I would be quick and say hi. So you're now going on onto another subject. I'm like, oh, Rob, shut the fuck up.
This may have to be a
we'll always have 2014.
You guys have a few weeks to decide on format and agree on topic, because I think
we're talking about guns, because that's all I really want to talk about.
Guns? Okay, well,
guns.
I guess we're gonna talk.
The spiritual filmmaker and the ordained reverend and the devout pagan is talking about his own AR-15 with his 100-round beta mag and why I need it and why I want it.
Oh, wow.
Well, should we talk about something?
Okay, we're down to 2 minutes on the show, so we're going to let our guests go for now so Sis and I can wrap up. I'm just saying, we got a few things to say without you guys around. But definitely the gun debate is on for the first Friday of next month. Be there or be square. It's going to be awesome.
Be there or be octagonal, yes.
There you go. I love you. I have missed you. Don't be a stranger like you were for a month there. And we are looking forward to next month's debate. It's going to be a scream. On more than one
thanks
level,
for him.
I'm sure.
Thanks for having me on, everybody. And be fabu and be fabulous. And I will see you in the new year.
Love you.
I love you, ladies.
Thanks, Rob.
Love you too, babe.
We'll see you next month.
Ooh, there you go. Wow.
Bring your skirt. No,
I'm just kidding. It's not a skirt. We killed the last one that called it a skirt. Remember that, woman.
I know. You can beat me later.
Ooh.
Love ya.
Okay. Ooh. All right. Love you, Rob.
Good night.
Talk to you later, Rob. Good night,
Bob.
Rob. Bye. Okay.
Oh,
first of all, if this motherfucker lays a hand on you, I don't care how big and bad he is, I will take him down at the kneecaps. That's number one. Do not say shit like that to my sister on the fucking air, because I love you, but I will kill you. I do like guns, and we will talk about that at next month's debate also, because I've had guns and I'm not afraid to fucking use them. So anyway, now that I'm off my soapbox, I think this is a great idea. I'm very excited about it. I love Talatin and I love Rob Grillo. I love both of these men very, very much. I'm very attached and fond of both of them. So I think this is going to be a wild debate. And anyone who used to listen to the show back in the early days, like when we first started this show, Rob was one of our first guests. And on a subsequent show, Rob and I got into a heated discussion about abortion. And we both maintained, even though the levels got a little escalated, we did manage to keep the respect alive, and we do love each other. We are good friends. That being said, this is going to be fucking amazing.
I know. That was definitely a pleasant surprise. So this is going to be fun next month. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I'm you know what? We should do the show from the same place, and I'm going to make some popcorn, and we're just going to sit there and let them go.
Oh, that would be a riot. That's just going to be such a fabulous idea. I love that idea. We will need to do it from a place where we can be in separate rooms, though, because the feedback will kill both of us unless we can get a speaker. So, well, I mean, if we can get a speaker situation happening where we're both on one line, that would be magnificent. But I'm personally, I think this is going to be a beautiful thing to advertise for the next month. It's going to be a riot. For sure. So the red team and the blue team are going to line up. You know, here's the funny thing to me. I've always had a problem understanding how it's kind of like gay Republicans. Why do you want to be on a team that doesn't want you as a player? That's kind of my view of pagan Republicans. They're very, you know, the fundies are very Jesus-oriented, and that's kind of who's running the base right now. So Rob is not the only one. Clearly, my first husband is the same way, and it still gets under my skin. And if somebody can explain to me, although I will give this to Rob and not to my first husband, I think, doesn't like Obama merely because he's on the bandwagon of not liking Obama. I actually think Rob has reasons that are not due to anything having to do with the common culture of it. So I think we'll get some of that information out of him on the next show. To my ex-husband, I love you, but that's just a fact. Sorry.
I think, honestly, too, because, you know, most of our political shows have been just Taliesin and the liberal view and the Democratic side of it. You know, it's going to be nice to, you know, get the other side. You know,
only on occasion, because the fact of the matter is that I have no problem saying it's our show, and I don't mind. I don't mind the fact that a lot of the time the guests' views politically mirror my own. I'm happy with that. That's why it's not a Republican show. But the fact of the matter is, when you have people you respect and love with differing opinions, it makes the conversation a lot more amenable, because there are people who do love and respect each other having the disagreement. It does make a difference, as opposed to strangers who will completely devolve into vitriol, which gets nobody anywhere. There is no understanding after that. That's just a screaming match. You know, Rob and I can yell at each other, but there is an undercurrent of, you're my brother and I love you, and we're good. No matter how much we disagree, we're good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you and I don't always agree on everything, but we still love each other. She smacks me around and I'm good.
That's so not true. I do not hit you. Don't tell people that. No, see, and just as I would say to you, you know, just as I would, like, teasingly make a threat to Rob, I'll take your knees out. I don't want people to think anybody hits you. I don't hit you. Rob's not going to hit you.
Nobody's
going to hit you. I love you.
I know. And I love you, too. And we've got 90 seconds, so we've got to go. I'm sorry.
All right.
But, yeah.
Wrap it.
Next week, we've got Jade come back because he was on last month due to projects that he has going on. So he will be back next week. And we are going to be lining up some interesting shows. And please join us month, but great blessings to you all. Hug your loved ones, and we love you guys. Thanks for coming.
Bye. Yeah. Bye.